All right, Alexander, let's do an update as to what is going on in Ukraine. What is going on in Ukraine? There is the town of Pisky, I believe. Pilsky? Pesky, Pesky.
Pesky,
Pesky.
pesky, yeah.
Pesky. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
There is Bakhmut. All of it is Russian advances. The Great Kherson Offensive. I don't know what's going on there. It's not happening, to be quite honest.
No.
We are getting
Yeah.
reports from various mainstream, collective West mainstream news outlets that things are going really bad in Ukraine. The most notable, I think, a report which tied in China as well was the New York Times article. We'll probably discuss that in another video when we talk about China from Thomas Friedman. But he kind of slides in that all of this Ukraine stuff is just a complete catastrophe. The whole thing's just falling apart, to be quite honest. And we had the Amnesty International report that came out today, and we have more shelling in Donetsk, which, as terrible as it is a sign that Zelensky is losing and he's getting desperate. And August, I think you said August is going to be the month where things start to fall apart for Ukraine. That's the way it's looking. And we also have reports that Russia appears to be gearing up for something big as well. Is there anything else that we need to discuss, Alexander, on the
I think you summed it all pretty well. But I'm gonna say, I think we can put this all together actually, and establish a fairly interesting picture, because the big story for weeks has been the Great Kherson Offensive that Zelensky had ordered, and which is going to change the whole direction of the war and lead Ukraine to some great victory and drive the Russians out and recapture Crimea and all those things. Well, notice, as you rightly say, no sign of it. Instead, what we're getting is more and more indications of absolute anger and mounting recriminations, both within Ukraine and between Ukraine, or rather, I should say, between Zelensky and some of his foreign backers. Because what seems to have happened is that in order to prepare for this great offensive in Kherson region, which has never happened, Zelensky ordered that the Ukrainian defenses in Donbass be stripped of a lot of their artillery. And this is now being confirmed by Ukrainian bloggers, by the way. And it was redeployed to Kherson, well, not to Kherson region, but to the area near Kherson region, to support the great offensive. However, the great offensive never actually happened because the Ukrainians weren't able to really organize it. There just weren't the troops or the machines there. And in fact, on the contrary, there's been a big Russian build-up in southwest Ukraine in Kherson region, which we're going to come to. But in the meantime, with all that artillery redeployed from Donbass to southwest Ukraine, what has happened is that the most heavily fortified parts of the Ukrainian defense lines, the defense lines opposite Donetsk City, where this town, it's a big village called Pesky, is located. But there's other places that we'll be hearing about, Marinka, Avdiivka, all of these places, which are really big villages, but they've been sort of turned into sort of fortresses over the last 8 years. There's lots of trenches, concrete bunkers, all of those things. But they all needed artillery to function. So the artillery was all taken away to Kherson region. The Russians, of course, found out about it, and they launched their attack on this particular location of the Ukrainian front lines, knowing that all these bunkers, trenches, and all of the rest wouldn't be covered by artillery anymore. And they've punched through. And it looks like this entire defense line, or at least parts of that defense line, are now disintegrating. And we've heard that, two big Ukrainian units have refused to fight. There's furious recriminations, lots of Ukrainian soldiers are writing angry blog pieces about this. And there's also talk that there's now arguments and quarrels between the Ukrainian high command, General Zaluzhny, who is the chief of the Ukrainian staff, and Zelensky's office. And they're all saying, you know, that this is a terrible mistake. We need to send that artillery back. However, Zelensky himself is now pushing back, and he says we need to keep this artillery in southwest Ukraine, not because we're going to start some great offensive towards Kherson region, but because the Russians are planning a great offensive in this very same region. They're preparing for an advance on a city called Kryvyi Rog. Kryvyi Rog is a major industrial center. It's the base area of the Ukrainian units that were being assembled to attack Kherson, you know, this part of this great offensive, this offensive that never happened. But Zelensky and his people, like Alexei Arestovych, who is, you know, Zelensky's spin doctor, they're now saying that it is Kryvyi Rog, on the contrary, which, far from being the base for the offensive towards Kherson, is now going to be the target of the Russian offensive that's now apparently being prepared over the next few days. So there's now a huge amount of quarrels about that. Now, just to add one little point about Kryvyi Rog, it is also Zelensky's own childhood home. That is apparently where he lived when he was a kid. So he may have particular feelings about this. But anyway, one way or the other, you can see that the military strategies have gone hideously wrong. Ukraine clearly can't be strong in every place. Trying to mount this offensive in Kherson region, all that it did was weaken Ukrainian defences in Donbass. The Ukrainian defences in Donbass are crumbling as a result even faster than they might otherwise have done. The Russians are already advancing in up places like Bakhmut City and wherever, but they've now punched through these major defence lines. And one gets the sense that the US especially is now losing confidence in him. Now, Larry Johnson, who we interviewed, who's a former CIA man, but who's still got contacts in the intelligence world, he said that the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is one of the top intelligence agencies in the US, has now told the White House that Ukraine is coming apart at the seams. That was Larry Johnson's words. And we also read in National Review, this is this conservative neocon magazine created by the late William Buckley, now edited by Jim Garrity. Jim Garrity is saying that the Biden White House is now setting Zelensky up as the fall guy for when, you know, this collapse in Ukraine comes. But I get the impression that this has been the moment when faith in this enterprise, even amongst its Western sponsors, at least its American sponsors, has finally crashed.
Yeah, that is why they are searching for other people to fight. Taiwan.
No. Exactly.
Kosovo. All exactly. of these things.
Exactly. Exactly.
If NATO was, if NATO, the EU, the United States, if they were the ones that were directing this war, say, out of Lviv or even Kiev, if, you know, it was those commanders that were actually directing the war, then why are things going so poorly for the Ukraine military? Or is it indeed Ukraine and Zelensky that are directing this war, and the NATO command is just kind of overseeing it from the west of Ukraine, Poland, wherever they may be located?
Right. But I think I can answer that question. I think it is the Western powers that have been directing the war. We've been getting increasing reports ever since the beginning of May that Ukrainian generals, Zaluzhny, were getting very exasperated by the bad military advice, as they saw it, that Zelensky and his people were getting from the West. And it's absolutely clear to me that the pressure to launch this counteroffensive in Kherson region was coming overwhelmingly from the West, specifically and particularly from the British. Now, I think that the Western powers, the United States and Britain, have completely misunderstood the real nature of this war. Remember, they're at a distance from it, so they're trying to control it from a distance, you know, far away without really having a feel of what's going on. I think at some level they probably do believe the stories that they've been spreading about these vast Russian casualties, the fact that the Russians have lost a third of their tanks, huge numbers of their infantry, all that sort of thing. So I suspect that they needed a big PR win. They needed a big PR win to keep people in the West in line over this war. So that's why they pushed for this Kherson offensive. And I think they said to themselves, well, we can pull all the artillery from Donbass because the Russians are too enfeebled, they're too run down, they're too exhausted to actually launch an attack at this time. So it's reasonably safe for us to do that. We can redeploy to Kherson region, and that way we will score this great victory. We'll blow up those bridges across the Dnieper, which, by the way, hasn't happened. We are going to pull the artillery from Donbass. The Russians are too exhausted to advance. The head of MI6 actually came out and said that the Russians have run out of steam and that this is a good time, the right moment for Ukraine to go on the attack. So I think that's what they said themselves. That's what they said to Zelensky. Zelensky, of course, listened to what they said. We were saying to him, they needed this big win in Kherson region to keep everything politically on track in the West. And as a result, what we have is an absolute shambles, a disaster on our hands. Well, of course, we can't accept the blame for that ourselves. So we're looking for the fall guy and we're picking on Mr. Zelensky, who, by the way, is doing something else which I think shows his desperation. He's apparently trying to call Xi Jinping, which is, it's so wild at this time. But we've had a report from the South China Morning Post, which is a Chinese newspaper based in Hong Kong, slightly independent of the Chinese Communist, the Communist Party of China, but nonetheless, pretty well informed. And it says that Zelensky has been contacting Beijing, the foreign ministry there, desperately, apparently, trying to set up some kind of telephone call with Xi Jinping, and that he's trying to persuade Xi Jinping to call Putin, to persuade Putin to cut Zelensky, presumably, some slack, to slow things down, to start some kind of mediation process. So I believe that story, by the way. It's a South China Morning Post, pretty reliable about this sort of thing. That is another sign of how desperate Zelensky is getting.
Yeah. You think he's doing that on his own, or you think he was put up to it by the State Department? Because I was kind of reading that article.
Well, who knows?
Yeah, because I was kind of reading it he's still trying to move China away from Russia, which I found very, very bizarre, given just 24 hours ago, all the Taiwan stuff went down. Yeah.
Well, the whole thing is such a mess that it's very difficult to know who is doing what. But whatever, it comes across as a very desperate move. I mean, whether it's the State Department putting him up to it, whether it's himself doing it, it suggests somebody who's just running out of options.
Go ahead. Running out of options, and
I mean, so you know, we did this program a couple of days ago, about a week ago, in which we said that the Kherson offensive was his last throw. It doesn't look as if it's even going to happen now. So I mean, he's basically out of cards to play. And, you know, you remember that business about the bridges, that they were sending the missiles against the bridges. Apparently they tried to hit the bridges again last night. All the missiles were intercepted or missed. And even the British Ministry of Defence, which publishes these extraordinary bulletins, I've noticed that they've stopped giving news, however warped and distorted it's being. They used to give battlefield reports. Over the last couple of days, they've stopped doing it.
How are they going to pin all of this on Aletsky? Have they given any indications? Have you seen any indications how they're working to pin this failure on Aletsky? I haven't quite seen anything concrete yet outside of some collective West mainstream media, which is kind of hinting that Alensky's really messing things up. But have you seen anything that indicates this is how we're going to blame him for all of this, and this is how Biden is going to wash his hands of Ukraine?
Yeah, well, Jim Garrity at National Review said that the first thing they're going to say is that Zelensky left Ukraine unprepared for the war because he didn't listen to Biden's advice that the Russians were about to attack. So they get that. That's the first thing they're going to say. And, I mean, they'll be saying other things.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Hopeless. It's a good one. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, the great wise, all-knowing Biden got it right, but Zelensky messed up totally, and the result was that Ukraine wasn't ready. Now, I mean, what bearing that has on the situation now, what relevance it has to the Kherson offensive, I simply don't know, but there we go. I think Zelensky's position, by the way, has been weakened by one other thing, which is that his great ally and friend, Boris Johnson, is leaving the scene. And I think without Boris Johnson to, you know, talk for him, to speak up for him in, you know, the councils of the West, he becomes very obviously the fall guy now.
Yeah. Yeah, I've read reports that German weapons are failing as well. How do you explain all the final question, if they're going to cut Aletsky off, how do you explain the fact that they're still going to be sending HIMARS and all these weapons and stuff like that? Or have those been tapering off as well significantly?
I think they have been tapering off, actually. I think when you actually drill into the figures, you can see that the numbers of weapon systems and indeed the amount of ammunition and other things like that that's been heading towards Ukraine is actually starting to slip. It's getting less rather than more. But, of course, the momentum behind this is enormous. And some of these latest weapons deliveries, especially from Germany, are weapons that were committed to Ukraine, promised to Ukraine weeks ago, before the whole situation got as disastrously out of control as it is doing now.
Yeah. The Europeans have been very quiet, actually, for the past week as well, with regards to Ukraine and Aletsky. I mean, you hear statements every now and then, but like Van der Crazy and Scholz, they haven't been so boisterous. They haven't been so, you know, bellicose. That's something that I've noticed.
Phil, because, yes, absolutely. I mean, the other thing to say is this. I mean, back in March, I think they did fool themselves into thinking that Ukraine was going to win. I mean, a crazy idea, an absurd notion. But they did. They actually, I think, talked themselves into thinking it. Now, of course, that it's all going wrong, they all want to run away from this as fast as they can. Problem is, all the things they said in February and March and later are there. I mean, you can't completely, you know, erase them from the record. You can do so to some extent in the West, but as we've seen over the last couple of days, the world is not the West. There is a wider world outside the West where all of these things are remembered. One way or the other, the European Union is in a terrible mess, you know, far worse mess than the US itself is. The US, as always, can walk away. The EU is stuck with this, and one does wonder what they're going to do. And notice that Gerhard Schroeder, the great advocate of Russian-German Entente, has resurfaced. He's given big interviews to Stern and to German television. Obviously, he came in for a lot of criticism, and he still is. But, you know, he's now actively floating the idea of opening Nord Stream 2. And apparently there's more and more people in Germany saying that that's what Germany needs to do.
It's this simple, easy solution. And but I get the, I mean, just to finish off the video, I read Gazprom's statement with regards to the turbines and all the problems with Nord Stream 1. I read that statement from Gazprom, and it seems like Gazprom doesn't want to do business with Germany. I mean, Olaf Scholz did this photo op with the turbine. That's what it was for, to show the German people, look, we have the turbine, but the Russians aren't taking it back, so they're the ones to blame. But here it is. Here it is, everybody. I got it back. You know, he wanted to show that. But, you know, listening to Gazprom's reply to Germany with regards, and Siemens with regards to the turbine, they're like, just seems like, look, you know, there's too many problems dealing with you guys. The sanctions, dealing with Canada, dealing with Germany, dealing with Siemens, the delays, the paperwork is not in order. We just don't want to deal with you. You know, it's like that bad supplier that you're like, you know, I'm done with that guy. I'm moving on. That was really the vibe of their statement, the essence of their statement.
Absolutely. And can you blame them? And we've been saying this on the Duran now for weeks. I mean, from a Russian point of view, this relationship between Russia and Europe, between Gazprom and its European energy customers, between Gazprom and Germany, has been more trouble than it's worth. Gazprom has been targeted with smear campaigns, targeted with law cases, targeted with EU investigations. It's had media campaigns run against it, and of course it's been subjected over the last few weeks to a relentless sanctions war. But that sanctions war has come after years of harassment. Is it surprising that the people in Gazprom have said enough's enough? The trouble of exporting this gas to Europe, it's more than it's worth, because clearly these people are just unreliable. I mean, they don't like us. They don't like to have do dealings with us. We can't trust them. So even if they're prepared to pay more than, say, some of our Asian customers would do, with our Asian customers, it's a no-problem relationship. We can negotiate toughly, we can do a deal, the deal is done, and it's implemented, and there's no trouble. Even Japan is insisting that it's going to continue with its deals with Gazprom. So that's the difference between Asia and Europe. So the Russians, Gazprom, are saying, enough's enough. We're fed up with all of these stories. We're fed up with the story about the turbine. We're fed up about all the story of the paperwork, your sanctions, your egos, your vanity, all of that. The point has now come where we've decided once and for all to pivot east, build our relationships with people we can work with and trust, save ourselves all the angst and anxiety and lawyers' fees that we've had to spend, and just go ahead and build our business. Now, anybody who has experience in business knows that business works on trust. If trust isn't there, a business relationship cannot succeed. It's impossible. You can't buy trust. You can't just spend money. You can't just say to your the person you're dealing with, well, look, I'm going to be absolutely horrible to you. I'm going to be rude, aggressive, harass you in every conceivable way. But just because I'm paying you a few dollars more than the other guy, that means that you should continue to work with me. It doesn't work like that in business. The Europeans, Ursula and the others, never understood that, have never understood that, and probably they're incapable of understanding it. But now they're going to discover it. Gazprom is never coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because I provide a service or a product, it doesn't give you the right to smear and berate and do all of these kinds of things to me. I'll just leave it on this note. The Norwegian Council, that video that went viral with the Norwegian Council at a hotel in Murmansk. And she said, I hate Russians during that video. I think everyone sees that in Russia, like everyone, even the Gazprom executives. Even the Kremlin, because Zakharov actually commented on it. And you know what? They see stuff like that, and they say, you know, we're done. We're done with them. We're done. They go to hotel staff. They berate them. They say stuff like, I hate Russians. You know, just, we don't want to deal with you. Keep your turbine. keep it all, figure out another way to get gas, figure out another way to heat your homes, you know we're going to go elsewhere. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. We'll leave it there. TheDurant.locals.com and Durant Shop, 10%. Use the code GOODDAY.